There's nothing special about being American. None of you can define for me what an American is.
I am the nation. I was born on July 4th, 1776, and the Declaration of Independence is my birth certificate. The bloodlines of the world run in my veins because I offered freedom to the oppressed. I am many things and many people. I am the nation. I'm 200 million living souls and the ghost of millions who have lived and died for me. I'm Nathan Hale and Paul Revere. I stood at Lexington and fired the shot heard round the world. I'm Washington, Jefferson, Patrick Henry. I'm John Paul Jones, the Green Mountain Boys, Davy Crockett. I'm Lee.
Coming to you from the D-Tom Studios in the Free State of Florida, sponsored by Maker's Mark Bourbon. This is Don't Tread on America. Your host, Don, finishing up vacation queue. Here we go. Alright guys, how's everybody doing out there today? It is Thursday, March 21st, 2024, and yes, I am still on vacation, but still doing shows from beyond. You're welcome. A couple things, guys. What I'm going to do today is I'm going to play an interview that I was on Charlie Robinson's show back in August. Charlie Robinson from Macro Aggressions podcast, he had a radio show that was on TNT Radio. He has since stopped doing that for, I guess they were having some disagreements for whatever reason. But nonetheless, he still does his podcast, Macro Aggressions, and he's also on the Union of the Unwanted. Guys, if you aren't listening to those, either of those or both of those, you should. so check them out and listen to our interview that we did. This was back in August. The reason I'm playing this is because, oddly enough, what we talked about, what was that, 7 months ago, is very topical to what's going on right now. And if you didn't, or if you don't listen to Charlie and you didn't hear that interview, I never played it on my podcast, so I feel like it's a good time to do so. And so we'll get ready to it. Just before we get to that, guys, please make sure whatever podcast app you're listening to this on, you are following the show. Make sure you, if you're on Apple or Spotify, you can give me a good follow, a good review, 5-star, all that fun stuff. And whatever podcast app you're on, if you're not on those two, that's fine. Please follow the show, and then make sure you're sharing this with your friends. Guys, also, please don't forget about our sponsors. Of course, the self-promoted D-Tom store. Make sure you go there. Check that out. Free shipping everywhere in the world. Anyone that can hear my voice can get stuff shipped to them for free. Check it out. D-Tom store. Also, don't forget about our other sponsor, Reaper Apparel Company. Check them out at ReaperApparelCo.com. Use the promo code D-Tom to get 10% off your order. And guys, all of those links are on the bottom of the podcast app and what you're listening to this on. And don't forget us. Don't forget us at all. Don't forget to follow us on social media at Don't Tread on America on Facebook, Instagram, True Social, and the Ticker Talker. And what else we got there? Twitter. And Twitter X Machine at DTom_1775. And if you're not on social media, that's fine. You can check us out at DontTreadOnAmerica.com. And you can email me also, DonQ@DontTreadOnAmerica.com. All right. Let's get to the interview with one Mr. Charlie Robinson. Take it away.
At Macroaggressions, where I argue with idiots and robots online. Sure you do, too. We've got T. Snyder, hour number two from Conspiracy Synergy, one of my favorite people in the world. Hour number one, let's just jump right into it. I feel like this week the wheels have come off the American clown car, and I really don't know if there's anybody that would be more qualified to ride shotgun with me on this one than Don Q. You can catch his show, Don't Tread on America podcast, wherever podcasts are served. So let's bring him in without further ado. Ladies and gentlemen, Don Q. What's going on, Don? How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. How about yourself?
Well, I thought of you this week when I saw the mugshot. I thought, oh boy, Don and I are going to have plenty to talk about. Did the left just step on a giant Donald Trump-shaped rake with this one? Because it feels like giving this mugshot, which by all accounts is going to be probably the most viewed photograph in the history of mankind by the end of, oh, I don't know, maybe by the end of the weekend. This seems like a really poor strategy on their part to dampen the enthusiasm for Donald Trump. He's never been more popular than he is right now, right?
No, I mean, he's holding, what, a 30, 40, 50-point lead over any of the other contestants on the Republican side. And pretty much anyone that makes a T-shirt right now is going to have that picture on it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah. I think they just basically made this man president without even realizing it.
God. They're so bad at optics. I've noticed that. I mean, the Democratic Party's bad at a lot of things, but one of the things that they have no ability for self-reflection. They have no ability to sort of put themselves on the outside and look and see how this might appear to the general public. There, maybe it's the bubble they're in, or maybe it's the lack of oxygen, or just rampant insanity, or whatever. But this self-delusion, their inability to recognize, you know, this is a guy, Donald Trump, say what you want about him. I mean, everything has been said about him, good and bad, but he is a master of media manipulation, right? And if you want to play this game of taking a picture of him and using that as a weapon, like this guy is a black belt in media jujitsu. You know what I mean? Like, there's no way that you're going to defeat him with this. This feels like, you know, like the optics of perp walking your political adversary, taking a mugshot of him. I mean, I don't know, man. I got like some Soviet Union vibes from this.
It's very medieval almost. It's like the arrogance of the left. It's like they're putting this in everyone's face and they don't care. They just really don't care what they say, what they do. They're gonna arrest this guy for, you know, they've indicted him four times now. God only knows what's gonna happen between now and November of next year. And then to do this, Trump, you know, they were saying, oh, he shouldn't do the mugshot. The Secret Service is going back and forth with the Sheriff's Department. He wanted to do the mugshot. If nothing else, yeah, he is a master at self-promotion. So why would not he want to have that picture taken? I mean, he probably practiced the pose.
Oh, I'm sure he did. He's like, the world is gonna look at me. Oh, of course. Then let's do it. The world, I mean, this is one of the, like, they teach you this in public relations that, mm-hmm, like, you know, there is such a thing as bad publicity, of course, but that line is very blurry. And this publicity, I mean, you've now given him $100 billion of free media publicity with this. You've launched his campaign. You've given him something to fundraise off of. Look at how poorly they're treating me. Look at how unfair this is. You know, you're not going to let them do this. You know, I'm the only thing protecting that. They don't want me. They want you. I'm standing in their way. All of these things are now in play for 2024. That is the, you know, like you said, provided that they don't, you know, charge him as the Zodiac killer or something next week, which, you know, I'm not sure that's off the table.
Well, and I don't know if you listened to the interview with him and Tucker Carlson the other day during the debates that they had put on Twitter or X or whatever it's called now. And you know, Tucker straight up asked him, you know, what's left for them to do? They're pretty much just going to have to kill you at this point. You know, and it's, yeah. I mean, it's, I hate to say it, but it's almost getting to that point. I think the only reason they haven't tried to do that is because of, look at how everyone's reacting over a mugshot. What would happen if, God forbid, if that did happen?
Yeah.
It's, I mean.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be a catastrophic mistake. Mm-hmm. We know that the deep state, the permanent state, likes to make public spectacles of their assassinations. We do understand that.
Right.
But this one might. This the law of unintended consequences comes into play on this one, because I start thinking about all of the ramifications of an angry, I don't know, let's just say 100 million Americans that are fired up and pissed off and ready to do something about it, and looking at somebody to direct their anger towards, and they can only find the federal government. Mm-hmm. Ooh, that's a bad idea.
Well, I mean, and you're talking 100 million, you're talking a third of the population. You know, the Revolutionary War was won with 3%. So yeah. I mean, yeah, yeah. it wouldn't be very pretty.
Yeah, these inflection points, as I recall, yeah, looking back on them, they don't really require full participation.
No.
Participation. They certainly don't require 51% of the people. They just require an angry minority to get up and get in the streets, or withhold their services, or withhold their attention or money or something from this. But we're getting down. I think that you know, whether it's JFK or 9/11 or COVID or whatever, when you have these massive events, these engineered events, there's a backside to it, which is that it wakes up a bunch of people. And I'm wondering about this Trump indictment. You know, like, we saw what happened when he was president. We know that they hated him and the media hated him, and we get all that. But afterwards, now that he isn't president, we've seen this witch hunt, which I don't know. I mean, I don't know how else to describe it except a witch hunt. That I'm wondering, Don, if this isn't going to have an unexpected consequence for the Democrats, and that is that you wake up, there's a sizable percentage of the people out there that are sort of indifferent one way or the other to how, you know, whether Trump is the president or not. But they're watching this and they're going, this seems really unfair and kind of stupid what's happening. And that do we run the risk of them waking up a segment of the population to, like, the left's criminality and their desperation to put this man behind bars?
I think you have a chunk of the population of all races that might have not liked Trump a whole bunch. But for the fact of the matter, for the 4 years that he was president, paychecks were good. 401ks were good. You know, gas wasn't $5 a gallon, and now all those things have gone away, and I don't care what Biden and the government is saying about inflation. Oh, it's 3%. Well, it's 3% over the 9% it was over the year before, so it's really not 3%. Right. And so you take people are like, hey, you know, Trump, maybe he wasn't that bad, and now he's getting railroaded. I remember my cousin got railroaded, or my uncle got railroaded, or whatever, and he's going to gain support from people that he probably never had support from before, and they're just going to keep on keeping on. I'm just fortunate, or, you know, I think we're lucky that he's persistent in his stubbornness, I guess, if you could word to put it, because I know if I was 70 something years old, I would be like, screw it.
I know. Yeah, he's it's all that McDonald's, man.
Yeah, I guess.
Just keeps him fueled, keeps him angry. Yeah, I remember watching the movies when I was a kid, you know, and there was always a scene in, like, the action movies where you thought that they were going to kill the bad guy, but they left him alive, right?
Right.
they didn't finish him off, and the bad guy always comes back, right? In the end, there's a final act,
right?
And I believe that the Democrats view Trump as the bad guy, and they didn't finish him off. Do you think that there is a final act in which Trump, you know, comes out of the goopy ooze, the toxic Avenger monster, out of the swamp, and comes back for the final segment where he defeats these lunatics in the last battle of the movie.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. If they cut the movie short and that doesn't happen, what does it mean for people like us that don't have the voice or the notoriety that this guy has? And that's what people need to realize. Love Trump, hate Trump, I don't care. Look at the optics of what is going on. What did he really do to deserve all of that? He said he was robbed. Okay, how many Democrats have said the same thing? I mean, I think we're about the same age. And Gore did the same thing. Hillary did the same thing. And that's national elections. What about local elections or state elections or whatever, where it's like Stacey Abrams of Georgia, for the same matter, did the same exact thing.
There's a compilation video of Stacey Abrams talking for like 5 minutes straight, talking about how the election was stolen from her.
Mm-hmm. Right. And in the same state in which this gentleman just got indicted and booked and whatever, and she's running around scot-free, no bubbles, no troubles. So it's, people can see that. They see that, like, how come you're doing it for this person but not for that person just because he said some things that these people are also saying? And then, you know, you go to J6 and they want to hold him accountable for other people's actions that maybe he was 100% involved with, or maybe he probably wasn't 100% involved with it. I mean, by all accounts, it looks like more the FBI was involved in that situation more so than Trump. They just took the opportunity and ran with it.
Yeah. Do you think they want us to see this? I mean, because it's so obvious. I mean, when you look at the complaining on the left of the election being stolen. Listen, you should have the right to say whatever you want about the elections. They're all rigged anyway. Right. So it's not like, you know, the Democrats that are complaining about it and the Republicans complaining about it. Listen, you're both. I agree with both of you. The voting system is a disaster. But it's funny to me. Well, maybe not funny, but it's peculiar that it's only one side in which that's criminalized and the other side can do it rampantly. It makes me feel like they want us to see it, like that the only explanation for this obvious like double standard is that they want us to recognize that in fact there is a double standard and that we better get on board with this program or else we'll be on the wrong side of it, right?
Well, here's the perfect example of a double standard. Let's jump in the Wayback Machine to 2016, right, when Trump won. Now, I personally believe that election was rigged for Hillary, for her to win, because everything they accused Trump of doing, they were doing to ensure her victory. They just didn't realize that he was going to actually get so many votes. And I think that's why I saw so many people pissed off. And then this guy got, he wasn't convicted, but he was impeached over what they did. So even when he didn't cheat, he got accused of cheating and got impeached for it. And then when he didn't cheat again and complained about it, he got it's like nothing he could say or do is going to, you know, fix their thought process of what this guy is. For whatever reason, they just cannot stand him, and it's beyond me to know why.
Yeah, it's the most frustrating tactic is this projection. And the Democrats are masters of it. I mean, they're masters. They use it quite a bit. If I'm being honest, they're pretty bad about it because we can obviously see it. But they do that. They accuse their enemy of the thing that they themselves are doing. And they do it so often and so reflexively that it's become like second nature to them. You know, when Hillary Clinton stands up there and is screaming, the best way to know what Hillary Clinton is guilty of is to listen about what she is accusing Donald Trump of. Right. You can just take all of the things that she is accusing him of and say, okay, I made a list of all those things. Your point is taken, Hillary, but just on the off chance, I'm going to double check and make sure that you aren't doing the same things that you have accused Donald Trump of, because what I've noticed in the past is that if you take a look at the things that they complain about, it's always the things that they themselves are guilty of doing behind the scenes that nobody really wants you to know about. If you claim it's election interference, if you claim it's, you know, whatever they decide that they're going to pin on Donald Trump, it is just a a classic textbook case of projection, which is frustrating to watch. But I guess once you know kind of how all that stuff works, then it's easier to see it. We're going to be back with another segment with Don Q after the break. This is TNT Radio.
TNT Radio's State of the Nation.
What is the status in Maui right now?
Let's talk about Joe Biden's visit. There are gaffes after goofy statements after dumb statements. Every speech heaped adulation on the president for his ability to show up in Maui, to be empathetic about what happened in Maui, and most importantly, to heap praise upon him for all the generosity of the federal government. That generosity, as astounding as what I'm going to tell you is true, is $700 payout per family. Now, many homes here have three generations under the roof. Grandparents, parents, and children all live together. It's the Hawaiian way. So some houses might have 10 or 12 family members living together. Can you imagine how far $700 goes amongst a dozen people? Not very far.
State of the Nation on TNT Radio.
A better business tip from TNT Radio. One reason people tune in to TNT Radio is often because they're loyal to a specific show or personality. Our personalities have been a part of people's daily routine, and people continue to tune in. They trust TNT Radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
If you can't believe what you're hearing, get the straight talk from Charlie Robinson on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
We're back with Don Q from Don't Tread on America podcast. Go check that out. Hey, Don, you were on a heater last week about the FBI, and I was nodding along in agreement behind the scenes. I have described the FBI as the largest domestic terrorist organization operating inside the United States, and I'm still waiting for someone to prove me wrong on that. What do you make of this? This used to be a group that, if you were a casual, you know, observer of politics, somebody that just went to work and took care of the kids and, you know, got focused on the day-to-day stuff, you never even really thought about the FBI. But these days, it's hard to not see them in the news for the things that they're involved in. I feel like this has become like, you know, the Biden Gestapo or something like this. I don't really want to be, you know, real paranoid about this sort of stuff, but they're not giving me any sort of reason to feel otherwise. What do you make about this, about where the FBI is headed? Because it's definitely politicized these days, and it feels like a terrorist organization to me.
Well, I did a show last week, and I named them the Federal Biden Infantry, because
there you go.
They're not investigating anything; they're attacking. You know, and I brought up the situation of Craig Robertson in Utah, where they went to his house and essentially killed the man for threatening Biden, Alvin Bragg, Kamala Harris, and the FBI, among other people. And this is a 70, I think it was 75, 76-year-old man who was posting stuff on Facebook and, you know, posting pictures of guns and whatever. You know, stuff you shouldn't do just because you don't want to knock at the door. But this is an old man. This is a guy that's damn near Biden's age. I mean, If it were me, I would have said, okay, this is what we're going to do. We're going to take Mr. Robertson, we're going to lace up the gloves, and we're going to get Biden. We're going to put him in a ring. Whoever wins, wins. But
there we go.
But instead, they took this guy's idle threats seriously, went to his house at 6 o'clock in the morning, and killed him. And I put it up like, if someone broke my window out, now mine also, they taped over his ring door camera. So if someone covered my camera at 6 o'clock in the morning and then broke a window, I'm probably going to come out with a gun too. I don't care who you are. Yeah. On the other side of that door, I'm going to take it as an attack. This was obviously an older gentleman. He was killed because he probably brandished a weapon. They killed him. And I made the point out to say that this guy was talking about being a sniper and whatever. And then a week later, Biden's out on a beach in Delaware, wide open space. Now, you just had a threat, supposedly, a credible enough threat to kill the guy of a sniper, you know, attack or whatever. But yet you're going to let the president just wander out on the beach in a wide open area. I mean, how true was the threat, or was that your only threat? And you figured, okay, we eliminated the threat. You're good to go to the beach now, dude. It's just
right, that was the one guy.
Yeah, yeah, that
the
was
one
it.
Guy that wanted you. We took care of him. He was in Utah.
Yeah,
it's fine.
We got
you can
him.
Go to the beach now.
It just it, and then they constantly you see constant attacks. You know, whether you even flash back to Trump and Mar-a-Lago when they raided his you know place for the document situation, and in the meantime, every school shooter or mass shooter that we've talked about in the last 5 years. We're all known to us by the FBI, but no,
yeah,
but they didn't do nothing about those guys. They let them carry out their mission.
Well, they did. They did a little something, you know. They provided them with weapons, radicalized them online, got them all stirred up into a frenzy,
right.
Then gave them the direction, gave them a lift to the crime scene.
Right,
you know, did all those things. But this made me think of how. Now this was a alleged threat on the president, and that's one thing, but it made me think of red flag laws and how what a slippery slope this is, where, you know, God forbid you get on the wrong side of your ex-girlfriend and she decides to, well, I'll sort you out one way or the other, and calls the police and says, you know, you've got 18 weapons and that you're talking about how, you know, the only way we're going to take over, we're going to take this country back is with violence. And next thing you know, there's a knock at your door, right? And then they've got a credible threat that you might be a domestic terrorist operating on the homeland thanks to the Patriot Act. And next thing you know, you don't have any rights, right? Is that how it works?
Well, yeah, evidently. I mean, I know where I live here in Florida, there's some counties and there's some sheriffs that say those laws are unconstitutional. We're not following them. So, you know, depending on where you live, you kind of have that going for you. But, and I'm not 100% on the law, but last time I checked, when someone were to threaten the president, wasn't that the Secret Service's job? I mean, what was the FBI even doing there? That was my question from the get-go. I mean, what are they even doing there? They were sent there to kill this guy.
Besides justifying their budget, of course. They're showing that they're doing something. They're, you know, as we've noticed along the last couple of years, there seems to be a far greater demand for domestic white supremacy than there is a supply of it. So it feels like the FBI is maybe filling that gap in the supply demand curve, and they're providing some additional radicalized gentlemen for us for them to fight. I mean, I guess if there aren't real boogeymen out there, you have to invent them in order to justify your existence working for the FBI, right?
Yeah, and I think it probably could have been looked at, I mean, in my opinion, as a, okay, this is what happens when you talk about our president. We're going to come and kill you. So, just letting you know. And they knew it wasn't going to be much of a challenge. He was an old man, so. I mean, that's
I get bad vibes. I get Waco. I get Ruby Ridge. I get all that stuff coming back to me. And I know different scenarios, of course, but still, just the idea that there's an oversized reaction in response to something that was really not a big deal and wouldn't have been a big deal if they hadn't stirred it up even further in the first place. I don't know. Listen, I mean, I guess you have to take threats against the president seriously, but like you said, that's the Secret Service's job,
right?
I mean, they and apparently they've got plenty of guys to, I mean, they don't have enough guys to cover Robert F. Kennedy Jr., of course, right? He doesn't get any protection.
No.
They want to hang him out to dry, let somebody take target practice on him. But it did strike me as funny when I was listening to your broadcast when you were like, you know, they just put Biden right out there on the beach. You know, if a sniper was really after him, if that was the real threat, like you couldn't have put him in a more vulnerable spot than sitting on a beach and, you know, with no Secret Service around. I mean, that I could see. I'm sure they were somewhere out there.
Yeah, I'm sure they were in vicinity, but there was no people on the beach. There was no, I mean, if you're a good enough sniper, you're not even going to see the sniper anyway. So there's a lot of questions on that.
I was at Barton Creek a couple weeks ago. In Austin, after the American Liberty Awards, I was with some of the InfoWars guys, and their security was closer to them than Biden's was. We were in the river, and the security was in the river with us.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, that was wild to me, man. We've seen this lately. I don't know if it's just the humiliation ritual of America that they're trying to do this for us and show the world that they can take us down culturally. But it feels like over the last 2 years, especially since Biden has been in office, but I'm not going to place this solely on him, but it feels like a cultural hollowing out of America. And it started in entertainment. We've seen a lot of it. Disney, Netflix, cuties, remaking movies and everything. There's a new, you know, woke Disney, of course, it just can't seem to get anything right, losing close to $1 billion in their 9 movies. They're about to release Snow, Off-White, and the 7 ethnically diverse, multiracial, half people remake movie. And I can't wait for this thing to bomb. It feels like we're in the middle of a culture war, and guys like us are sort of sitting in the bleachers watching it all play out. And I'll tell you, it's funny to watch, but there is a part of me that also recognizes and can kind of extrapolate out where this is headed. And my fear is that it's all fun and games right now when woke Disney is embarrassing themselves by making these remakes. But like, if you get a couple years down the road and this continues year after year, movie after movie, my fear is that we're going to get an entire generation of kids that are just that have grown up in this woke world and really are, I don't know, I guess, unqualified to function in society. You're in Florida, man. Florida's pretty, you know, you guys are pretty insulated from a lot of this, but you're also the heart of Disney too. Like, what have you been seeing out there with this, you know, DeSantis and Reddy Creek and his battle against Disney's wokeness and their insistence on tanking their stock price. It feels like it's being, I don't know, man, it feels like it's being made to happen. What have you been seeing in Florida with all this stuff?
Well, I tell you what, you go over to Orlando or, you know, in that area, and it's like nothing has changed. The places are still packed. And We went to Universal last weekend, and it's a lot of foreign travelers. So I think a lot of those people aren't paying attention to the wokeness and don't really know what it is. And I think this whole wokeness thing is just, it's coming to a point. I think a lot of this stuff started years ago, like in sitcoms, you know, the father was always made to look like the goof. And you know, it taught kids to be like, oh man, dad's just a goof. You know, I remember watching, you know, shows like Home Improvement and stuff like that. And I know that show was centered around Tim Allen's comedy act, but I was younger when that show was out, and I never really thought of, I was like, man, my dad's not like that. He'd kick my ass, you know? And so it was like,
right.
But now, even with Barbie, I don't really watch movies anymore because I can't stand most of these people anyway. But from what I understand, the Barbie movie was about denigrating men and stuff in that movie. And even with Snow White, like this Rachel Ziegler come out with an interview a couple of weeks ago saying how, well, we might even cut the princess part out of the whole movie. Who cares? So
yeah, he's a stalker. The prince is a stalker is what she called
right,
him.
Yeah. Yeah. Stalker much? Yeah. And it's like the whole premise of the story was that, you know, you ate an apple that you weren't supposed to eat, and this dude's trying to save your life, and now he's a stalker. I mean, what does it say about you living with 6 other or 7 other guys?
Yeah, exactly. Let's get into this. What kind of OnlyFans situation is Snow White working on over there, you know?
What kind of fetishes do you have? But, you know,
The writer's strike.
Yeah.
The writer's strike is, you know, I mean, they're out there protesting, saying like, this is unfair. We need to be taken seriously. We can't let AI replace us. It's like, well, you know, I'd love to have a little bit more sympathy. I mean, I'm not going to get in the middle of watching these two, entities destroy each other, because I have no respect for the Hollywood studios or the writers. But directed towards the writers, like, you guys have been writing garbage for the last 10 years. Like, you should be replaced by monkeys, not AI. I mean, anything would be better than what we've been seeing from these writers. So I don't exactly have a ton of sympathy for their plight. Again, I mean, I know they're going up against the big bad studios, and everybody always likes to back that, but it's like, hey man, like, you've been writing about my three daddies for the last 10 years and nobody's watching it. Maybe, I don't know, maybe craft some better narratives or write movies that aren't trying to make the audience to turn into a militant Marxist or something. I don't know, just a suggestion, right?
Yeah, I mean, I remember watching shows that had a husband and a wife, had kids, you know, I mean, take All in the Family. I mean, it's in the title of the show itself, All in the Family. Granted, they could never show that show nowadays because God forbid.
Oh, no.
But even God. Like the Jeffersons, you know, those types of shows showed a little bit of dysfunctionality, you know, more of a real life, how things really are in a household between husband and wife, kids, grown kids, whatever. You know, even if you go into like the Cosby Show, granted, Bill Cosby, whatever, but that show kind of showed you, hey, here's an idea of a household with two working parents that can raise a family and blah, blah, blah. Now it's all about, well, we don't want to have a family unit. We don't want to have a husband and wife together. We don't want to have a happy house. We want to have dysfunctionality and teach everybody that this is how it should be. And it's like, I think we learn, unfortunately, a lot from TV shows and movies, and kids and young adults think that's real life and that's how it should be. And they want to take the fairy tale away because there's no such thing as fairy tales. But I think you have to have something to believe in. But if we just constantly see dysfunction, then what kind of kids are we going to raise? Especially if you have parents that are hands-off on the kids. Because the parents nowadays that are raising the kids, the younger parents, are too involved with their cell phones and social media and Snapchat and whatever else is out there, that they don't even pay attention to what their kids are doing.
Yeah, and even if they had the desire to pay attention, they might not have the hours in the day because prices of everything are going through the roof and they're having to work a little bit harder, or maybe they're having to work an additional job and they don't have the luxury of being at home with their children as much as they would like to, for those that would like to. I mean, I know there's a segment that don't even really care one way or the other, but for those that even that would love to be there and be a great example for their kids, they just don't have the time. They've had to prioritize other things in order to make sure that the bills are paid. And so now you get a situation like when we grew up watching these shows, and at least there, like you said, there was a dysfunctional kind of family, but it was the family unit. And in the end, it was like, you knew you were going to see that family back together next week. And they were still going to be there together. They weren't splitting up and leaving. And nowadays you've got, you know, that there is an agenda happening in television. And if you allow your kids to be raised by the television or the internet, then you're going to get some unintended, consequences of that as well. Because this creep of cultural Marxism is very real. People that dismiss it only dismiss it because they haven't really paid attention to it. They haven't really opened their eyes to what's happening. But there's a tactic that they employ, and that is to target the kids early on. They want to separate the kids from the family. If you can separate the kids from the family, they'll make that attachment with the state, and that's where they step in. And so we'll transition you, don't tell your parents about this, or we're going to go by, we'll allow you to use different pronouns at school, but don't tell your parents about it. Don, that's what pedophiles and groomers say to children, right?
Right. It's like, short of them saying, if you tell your parents, I'm going to kill you. I mean, I mean, you figure you send your kids to school for, you know, 8 hours a day. And then, like you said, if you have older kids that are, you know, 12, 13, 14, whatever, and they go to school and they're having to deal with this with a teacher or whoever for 8 hours a day, then they come home and watch their television programs. You know, they're not shows, they're programs. They're programming you. And then so you have 12 hours of all this constant barrage of you're different. It's fine if you're different, you know. And then when mom or dad come home at 5-6 o'clock in the evening, it's like they're tired. And it's just, there's just not much time. Like you said, there's not a lot of time for the family unit. And I just think, I mean, TV's one thing and it's bad enough, but even if you take TV out of it, just about every kid I ever see anymore that's over the age of 10, it seems like, has a cell phone. And what are they seeing on that?
That's true, yeah. I saw a documentary a couple months ago called Parenthood 2.0, and it was talking about the dangers of technology with kids. And they were interviewing the kids, and then they were separately interviewing the parents. And they were finding out, like, what the parents thought the kids were seeing on the phone was vastly different than what the kids were actually seeing on the phone. And what was crazy about it was that, like, the high school kids were into it. Was like they asked one of the kids, like, what's up with porn or something like that, and they said, oh, it's you know it's like required, got to send nudes to each other. And the I remember looking at my wife, we're like, what? What are they talking about? And every single kid they interviewed, they said, what is this about sending nudes to one another? Is that a thing? They're like, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And like every one of them. And I thought, we were stunned. Like we were clearly in that parent category that like didn't know what we didn't know. And I was mortified by that. But it seems like there's been this push, normalization through music. Of course, there's a component of this. Leading us into an OnlyFans lifestyle. I mean, this seems like it is a bad path to put a bunch of kids on, to show them that there's a way you can make money and be famous and be free to do whatever you want to do. And that is to sexualize yourself online. This sounds like a really bad idea. These images never go away, right? I mean, right. This is like, this stuff winds up somewhere. And if kids are getting into this, this seems like a way to hollow out the culture from the inside.
It's in the cloud. Not to mention the fact that these kids are kids. So they're minors and they're sending nude images over the, I don't want to say airwaves, but you know what I'm saying? They're transmitting naked images of each other. Surely there's a crime involved there somewhere. And it's where it's just accepted behavior. I mean, I guess if your child needs to have a phone for whatever reason, if you feel like your child need, I need to give little Timmy, he needs a phone, that way he can get in contact with me. Cool. They still make flip phones. You can have one of those. You don't need a smartphone. I know most of us have it, but
it's become normalized though. It's easy. It's easier, right? You know, you're busy. You could just give your, you know, you, it's very convenient to have this. You've got a high powered computer in your pocket. I mean, I understand where parents get the temptation to want to do something like this and to just say, but we're having this battle right now. We have a 12-year-old and, you know, and it's, hey, you know, how about a phone? And it's like, well, how about not? Like, let's hold out as long as we can, just because I fear this, you know, listen, I've seen Black Mirror. I know it happens, you know, I know what happens with this technology, but I wonder though, Don, like, where do we find the balance between like preparing kids for a life in which they're going to need to know how to thrive with technology, and yet at the same time, not allowing this technology to destroy their soul, I guess, right?
I guess you can, only thing you can really hope for is that you're doing the right thing as a parent by teaching the child. The problem is mom and dad can say one thing, my buddy down the street's going to tell me another thing. So I know when my kids were little and Facebook was just kind of starting out and Twitter and whatever, and I was never big on that stuff, but I got on it to see what they were seeing. I was friends with their friends so I could see what their friends were talking about on social media. And I think sometimes parents seem to want to raise their kids to be their friends. And I my sister, because my sister's a little older than me, but her son's just, he's going to be turning 18 next month. And I used to always tell her, you're not raising him to be your friend. You're raising him to be an adult. You only have 18 years with him. After that, they're on their own. And then they got another 60, 70 or how many years to figure it out. You gotta not worry about being their buddy and teach them how to be able to be an adult, because that's going to come real quick. And you don't need a 30-year-old living with you.
No, and I think that there's a lot of parents out there that have maybe failed on that front. It's easy to do. It's easy to get it wrong. But it's a mentality trying to prepare these kids for a world that we ourselves are still trying to figure out how to navigate, with all of the expansion of technology and the internet of things and the direction that we're going. There's so much more to learn. I'll tell you what, we've got one more segment after the break with Don Q. So hang out and come back with us. This is TNT Radio.
With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Timothy Shea.
Where are the case counters? Where are the death toll tallies? 3 years ago, you couldn't turn on a TV without some newsreader or another intoning in their most somber, concerned Karen voice how many, quote-unquote, cases of COVID we had that day, and how many, quote-unquote, COVID deaths we had that day, even though they may have been from heart attack, cancer, motorcycle accident, stroke, or any number of other causes. 3 years ago, there was no end to the fear porn, but today, they're all curiously silent as the body count mounts. We've already seen the hard data that as many people died from COVID as ordinarily die during a normal cold and flu season. About 60,000 people in the United States, not the 600 plus thousand that they have claimed. But now we have gene modifying clot shots that in 3 years have resulted in 90% of the VAERS incident reports since the inception of VAERS. That's right, 90% of the VAERS reports were reported in the last 3 years, all in relation to the gene jab. Where did all the Karens go? Gone, but not forgotten, and hopefully never to return. From MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for TNT Radio.
Suck it up.
It's not a big deal.
Snap out.
Just get over it.
We've all heard it, but if you're experiencing extreme stress, it's not just in your head. It can affect your entire body, because toxic stress can hurt us physically without us even knowing it. If you've lost a job, worry about your next meal, or have trouble making it through the day, if you're feeling the effects of stress, we can help. Text STRESS to 211-211 to find a solution.
Charlie Robinson on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
We're back with a final segment with Don Q from Don't Tread on America podcast. Don, what's the best place for people to find you and to support your work?
Well, I have a website, DontTreadOnAmerica.com. You can go there. You can subscribe. I don't do a whole lot on there, to be honest with you. I just don't have time. But from there, you can find the podcast. You can go to the merch store and the couple of blogs that I do there. And the show is available on every podcast application out there. For whatever reason, the exception is Pandora. I don't know why. They don't want to carry the show, so I'm like, whatever.
Well, it's their loss, because it's a great show. And I had one of my macroaggressions listeners like, dude, are you listening to Don Q of Don't Tread on America? I was like, I'm not aware, please. And so they sent me your show, and I was like, oh yeah, now I know why you sent it over to me. You're right, it is a good show. I like listening to it. You and I have the Venn diagram of our beliefs on what is happening are very interlocked. I'll just say that there's a there's a fear I have of a president in our future, in our lifetimes. And I think you probably would agree that there is a push to normalize this lunatic as a president, a future president of the United States, and that's Gavin Newsom. Now, I lived in California for 35 years. I watched a beautiful state get turned into an open-air sewer in San Francisco. I watched Santa Monica, which had always had its problems, turn into just a Grateful Dead parking lot. And this is all not due to the big one. You know, they never got hit by the big earthquake. And of course, they just got a hurricane, which is kind of funny. But no asteroid strike, nothing like that. All governmental. All of the problems of California are governmental in nature. Power lines don't work, power, you know, load shedding, all that stuff. Laws passed, you can steal whatever you want, nobody cares, and you're not going to do anything about it. Criminals given stipends every month. Hey, you want to shoot heroin and fentanyl? Come here. Not only will we give you money to do that, we'll put you in a safe spot where you can do it in private, and we'll give you needles, and you can do whatever you want. Like, I feel like I'm taking crazy pills when I look at San Francisco and all of this, but yet this is the person, Gavin Newsom, who single-handedly destroyed San Francisco while being on the Board of Supervisors and then became the mayor of San Francisco and then later the governor of California. This is the guy you want to put in charge of the United States? Don, if I didn't know better, I would say that the only reason this guy would be put in charge of the United States would be to finally and decisively put it out of business once and for all. What are your thoughts on Gavin Newsom?
Well, I try not to think much about him, but I mean, for someone that's not running for president, he sure is doing a lot of politicking around the country. And now there's a supposed possible debate between him and DeSantis. And I'm like, why? If I'm advising Ron DeSantis, I'm going to tell him, don't waste your breath. This guy isn't president. He's not running for president. Or do they know something that we don't know? Because I can very well see that, I mean, even though Biden declared that he was running, is he? There's no campaign headquarters. There's no, you don't see him up there text, give me money to 1234. There's none of that. You never see him pimping himself as running for president, looking for donations. Is he actually running for president, or is this whole situation about to be over and they're keeping Gavin Newsom in the wings because I think they think that's their best option?
Yeah, it's funny to me because I have Democratic friends and I've asked them their opinion on RFK Jr., thinking, well, he's got to be, he's a Democrat, right? And maybe you'll find him an attractive candidate. And they said, he's disgusting. And I was like, well, really? Why so?
Because he's old school Democrat. Because he's not new.
because he's anti-vaccine was what they said. And I went, really? Wow. That's your, okay. So you need a guy that's pro-vaccine to be the Democrat. So the Republicans are anti-vaccine and Democrats are pro-vaccine. So we politicized science, which is fun. I don't think RFK Jr. I would have thought he might appeal to the lefties based on just his last name alone. And yet we're starting to see some pushback. What have you seen about the Democrats sort of, I don't know what sort of weird dance this is that they've got with RFK Jr. It's like, on the one hand, you'd think they would like him. On the other hand, they won't give him Secret Service support. It looks like they're trying to hang him out to dry to get him killed again, like another Kennedy.
Dad. Yeah. Well, yeah. He's come out and said that he's not anti-vaccine. He's anti-certain vaccines.
Right.
And, I saw an interview with him, and I don't recall who it was with, but, he was saying, I'm vaccinated. Like, when I was a baby, I was vaccinated for whatever the vaccines were. But back then, it was like 5. Now it's like 70-something. And it's like, because I was talking to a friend of mine, and I was like, when did they do the chickenpox vaccine? When did that become a thing? I mean, when I was a kid, if a little buddy Johnny down the street got chickenpox, the vaccine was go hang out with Johnny and get the chickenpox so he can get it over with.
Yep.
It's like, when did everything have to become a medicine? And I think it goes back to pharmaceutical companies who cause people to get sick so they can give them the vaccines. I think it's they play on both sides of the magic meter. And, you know, I think for whatever reason, just because he came out against the COVID vaccine, he's anti-vax and he can't be trusted. I don't know that I would trust him 100% either. I mean, because I know his stance on guns. Now, mind you, of all the politicians out there, he's probably got the best argument to be against guns. But...
Yeah, I guess he does, doesn't he? I never really thought about that.
Between dad
he's
and uncle.
Kind
I mean...
of anti-gun.
But he's also come out and said, I mean, as much as you can trust a politician, but he's also come out and said that if he were to become president, he would not ban guns. But if legislation was put in front of me, I would sign it. So you have that. But, you know, I just don't know. I think he says too much truth to some of these people and they don't like it. He's, like I said, he's not a woke liberal Democrat. He's an old school Democrat.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's got to go. They can't have that. They can't have somebody like being reasonable. I remember when Democrats didn't want war.
Right.
And now they're like, let's send more everything to Ukraine. It's been fascinating to watch this. And as somebody like, look, I don't even consider myself to be on the right. I consider myself to be sort of like in the middle, but the left moves so far left that by contrast, I appear to be on the right now. I think it's like, I don't even know if it's right versus left. To me, it's like sanity versus insanity. I feel like I can't support the things. I'm mostly just anti-war, you know? And so if I can, you know, as long as you're not trying to start wars with other countries, I'll listen to what you have to say. But these guys now, it seems like on the left, you have to show off at how big of a war hawk you are. Like I remember back in the day, that was like a neocon thing. Mm-hmm. And now it's changed. Now you've got Bill Kristol like supporting the Democrats and what universe am I living in right now where Bill Kristol is out there supporting Democrats? But it's like, I guess it's just whoever wants to bomb the shit out of some country that nobody's ever heard of before. I mean, if you want that, then the military industrial complex will put you in a position to become the president of the United States, right?
And that's the key is that right there, the military industrial complex, because that's who's making the money. We're paying those people's salaries to make, you know, billions of dollars for no reason, because I think the way they look at it is not hurting us. We're making money. But my opinion is, how much money are we spending on fake wars? I mean, we're giving billions of dollars to Ukraine. In the meantime, you got Hawaii going through its situation and we're going to get them help. But we have no problem giving $100 billion to Ukraine for whatever reason. And I know it's not straight cash, it's equipment and everything else, but that's beside the point. It's obviously a money grab by the military-industrial complex, and it doesn't matter if there's an R or D next to that person's name, they're going to sign off on it because they're going to get a kickback on the backside.
Smedley Butler was right. War is a racket. We see it. We've seen these, budget... You know, everyone nickel and diming you on social service budgets, but when it comes to another $1 trillion to the military for God knows what, sure, take it. Oh, we have an additional rider document that we need you to sign that's going to put another $20 billion towards it. Sure, you know, we've got to stand up and support all of this. It feels like insanity to me, but I don't know. What are you working on this coming week, Don? What do you got cooking?
I got a couple of things. It's kind of weird. I kind of fly by the seat of my pants, to be honest with you, kind of whatever I just happened to stumble upon. But, I came across this one thing, UN, I don't know if you heard of this, UN 2030. So that'll probably be on Monday's show.
Oh, God, that'll give you enough ammunition to go for the next couple of months on that. That's Don Q, everybody. Go check out his podcast, Don't Tread on America. It is fantastic and definitely worth the listen. We got hour number two, T. Snyder from Conspiracy Synergy coming up. Hang with us. This is TNT Radio.
Cheers, Don. That was great.
Thank you, Don.
Yep. Thank you.
All right, brother. I'll email you the link later or tomorrow or something.
All right. Sounds good. All right, guys. That was yours truly with one Charlie Robinson on his radio show on TNT. Also, he's on Macro Aggressions. Check them out. Guys, please continue to do what you're doing. You're helping us out. You're helping me out more than you realize. Don't forget about our sponsors, the DTOM Show and ReaperApparelCo.com. Use promo code DTOM at get 10% off, guys. All the links are at the bottom of the podcast app and what you're listening to this on. And make sure you follow us on social media on Facebook, Instagram, True Social, on the Ticker Talker at Don't Tread on America. And don't forget about our website, DontTreadOnAmerica.com, guys. I will be back with you in the flesh, baby, on Sunday. You guys have a fantastic rest of your week, and I'll talk to you again then. We'll have a lot to discuss, I'm sure. Being out of the pocket for 2 weeks, we'll have plenty to talk about. You guys take it easy, and I'll talk to you then. See ya.